having been there a few times as a delegate, the lot.
Hang on a second. Well, you've kept this completely buried forever.
Well, only ever as an underage delegate.
So, well, what does an underage delegate mean?
Someone that's not 60.
Yeah, exactly.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. Very welcome along to OTB AM, and we have a jam-packed show coming for you this morning. We'll let you know what's on the horizon in just a few minutes' time. I'm here. Shane Hannan is there. How are you, Shane?
Morning, Adrian. How are things?
Not quite sure where you are. Anytime we dial you up at the minute, it's following your social media handles, Shane. You've got a, geez, you've got a busy old social life, haven't you?
Yeah, I've actually got the live sport laryngitis, Adrian, I think I'm going to call it. The voice that can clearly give away the fact that I've been at a lot of live sport recently. Mm. So Old Trafford on Wednesday, and then the NFL in London on Sunday. So yeah, plenty of it. Yeah, can't complain.
We'll come back to you. Anybody croaky at the minute, and I'm a bit myself, gets sort of covered in suspicion of all sorts. We'll come back to you now in just a minute, but obviously we want to begin here. I was out of Tala last night for the Republic of Ireland against Sweden, and like, if you picked up the papers this morning or you checked in on the results, you'd think, geez, that was well done Ireland, that was great. Like, I mean, holding the second ranked team in the world to a 0-0 at home, but actually haven't been there and watching the reaction stuff last night, it can't get away from a sense of what might have been. And like, you never know with a game like that, and particularly with a team like that who are so technically good when you watch them, and they weren't at their best last night, I think we'd have to accept. I think a huge part of that was down to the Ireland pressure, by the way, but you just don't know. There's a concession of a goal like that, and it was so sloppy, and I'm sure the Irish defence, I'm sure Louise Quinn is kicking herself this morning. The nature of the goal last night was so disappointing, but you just don't know. Sweden get that goal, maybe there's something in their psyche that says, right, we've won up. Ireland didn't look hugely like to score at any point, and maybe they sit a little bit in the way that they mightn't have done. But I mean, obviously Ireland were pouring on the pressure late on, but the point being that the game can take on a personality of its own, can't it? Like, Sweden score that goal, sloppy as it is, and they kind of assume and ultimately right in the end that's going to be enough.
Yeah, and it's context, really. Like, I guess before the game you would have probably, I know this sounds bad, nearly taken a 1-0 defeat, but the way the goal happened, it leaves a kind of a sour taste in the mouth, and you're almost like, well, we could have got a draw there, we could have taken something else from that game. But I liked Vera Pauw's interview afterwards. Like, I liked her talking about the fact that this gives the team confidence. This, you know, going into Tuesday in Helsinki, this means that they're going to believe they can take points off any other teams in the group. You've got Finland and Georgia there, who haven't put it up to Sweden in any way close to what Ireland did last night. But there are concerns still. Like, you mentioned the fact that they can't really put the ball in the back of the net. That's been a problem that's kind of followed this team around for quite some time. Like, Karen will obviously have her thoughts on the show this morning on that, but that is definitely a worry. But it's concerning. Like, the great thing is, look, there's a lot of support for this team now. Like, you were there last night, like 4,000 fans cheering on this team. The increase in support for this Irish women's team over the last number of years has been a breath of fresh air. And the fact that we are now analysing a game against the second best team in the world as a disappointment in a 1-0 defeat is progress, I think.
Yeah. I wasn't sure about the you mentioned the Vera Pauw interview. I wasn't sure about it last night, I have to say. I think if you muted it and look at her body language, you nearly would have thought Ireland would have had won the game. And I know there is a bit of a sense of that. Look, you don't want to be you want to manage your expectation levels, is the point, right? Like, they're the second best team in the world. Ireland have never qualified for a major tournament. Sweden have qualified for every single tournament there's ever been, barring two, back in the early 90s. So, like, you do have to manage your expectations in that regard. But I did just think, well, were you a little bit accepting of, well, that was enough? Like, Vera Pauw get to sit with the FAI and say, listen, lads, held Sweden to a 0-0 at home. A lot of it does depend on what happens against Finland on Tuesday night. I think that we were talking about it before the game. We had an hour-long live special with Emma Byrne and Ruth Fahey and James O'Callaghan before kickoff at the Tala Stadium last night. We were talking about the games really needing to be looked at in the round last night and Tuesday night together. So it's hard to make a huge judgment. But, Shane, the absence of Denise O'Sullivan, it seems at this point, looking at even the pictures this morning where she's leaving the pitch last night with her arm, you hate to see that, where the jersey's been held up to kind of support the arm off. Such an important player to Ireland, that would be a hammer blow.
Oh, huge blow. Like, we often talk about Liverpool and, you know, the fact that the strength and depth maybe isn't there, and it's probably a little bit unfair sometimes on this Republic of Ireland team as well, that we often say that maybe on the bench there isn't that support. that seems to be changing. But to lose someone like Denise O'Sullivan would be absolutely huge. She's in the Katie McCabe sphere of someone who just is in the team every single game. There's no question about it. You just hope that is not a serious injury, that's something that she can recover from fairly quickly. Like, and just on the Vera Pauw thing, like, I get why managers have to project this kind of confidence and smiley attitude. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gets criticised as well for coming out and smiling after matches sometimes. And maybe, you know, after a team loses a game and like Ireland lose the game last night, you have to call a spade and I guess accept and point out where the team were not good enough. But I think this team maybe needs confidence and a manager that supports them publicly and in the media interviews. So I get what you're saying, but I also understand, you know, where Vera Pauw is coming from, that she knows the headlines and the photographs. She wants the thing to be a positive reaction. And look, maybe it's a tactical thing that she's smiling and happy as Larry after the match.
I think that's a totally fair comment. I think that in terms of where the trajectory of that team are at, Vera Pauw coming out and saying, and not lambasting in front of the media, Shane, I agree with you. I think that's probably not a bad approach. And as we said, the proof of the pudding will be in the result on Tuesday night. You keep mentioning Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We're coming back to him in a minute. First of all, Nathan was on full live commentary duty for the game last night. He was alongside Emma Byrne. It was a brilliant listen. Emma was a brilliant analyst as well. But after the game, Nathan did speak with Vera Pauw. Here it is.
Was that a good Ireland performance on a night that probably just needed a great Ireland performance?
Yes. No, I would say it's a great Ireland performance. Sweden is ranked second in the world. I'm so proud of these players, the way that they step up every single game and getting better and better and better. And it's just unfortunate that we couldn't steal a point here.
Yeah, because it was a valiant defensive effort. Courtney Brosnan in goal, it's been an area that's been up for a lot of debate. She certainly stepped up to the mark tonight.
Yeah, I think that we played again the best game that we've played so far. Every game we play better. And every game we are more and more comfortable to play a game plan.
Yeah.
And we knew that we did not have much chances forward and that we had to find that one or two chance that we got. But at the end, we had the game plan to play 1-4-2-4 and we managed, and Sweden even adapted to us. So that is a compliment, I think.
Yeah, that seemed to be the biggest thing in that second half, that you were frustrating the life out of Sweden, that they couldn't in this final third find any space whatsoever. There were some long distance shots, and actually for long periods Ireland seemed quite comfortable. It was just that little bit of being able to play it a bit further up the pitch.
Yeah, but that is because we had 9 players behind the ball, of course. And that's a choice. If we wouldn't have done that, we would have lost with 3-4 goals each half. So then we would have gone down with maybe 7-0, because we have to be realistic to have results against countries like Sweden. We need to grow further. And we believe. That's what I would want to say. We believe, yeah.
Yeah, because when you're playing a team of Sweden's calibre, it's one of those rare games where you can actually lose but learn so much and take so much. And I guess you have to as well, because Finland looks like the crucial games in this group.
Yeah.
You can't have a dressing room that have their heads down. They need to bounce back quickly.
Yeah, we need to see how Denise O'Sullivan is, because she's crucial in our game plan, of course. And
was it an arm injury?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know yet. The doctor has taken her inside, and I've not been inside yet.
Yeah, so Finland, huge. You're obviously confident with what you've seen tonight. I'd imagine you talk about there, if you set out to go and attack, you could lose 7-0. But Finland's a very different experience. A game where these players can go and really express themselves.
I think that they know now that if you set it with each other, we set the game plan that everybody believes in, and then we can play any opponent.
Hard luck tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Nathan in conversation with Vera Pauw at the end of the game last night. As you can tell by her body language there, pretty positive afterwards, and a huge amount does rest on the fitness of Denise O'Sullivan. We'll keep an eye on that, and if there's any updates on it, we'll let you know as the day progresses. Keep an eye on all to be social channels over the course of the day. But Shane has been at Old Trafford and he's heading back. You're heading back on Sunday?
Back on Sunday, yeah, for the big game against Liverpool. So yeah.
I am very firmly of the view that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should no longer be at the wheel, and that every time United are half decent, that that's the evidence that it's time for this guy to be done. I think that, like, a lot of people are saying that, well, listen, you know, the biggest counter argument to it is it's far better than what's gone before, right? Like in terms of Mourinho and Van Gaal, and I was at some of those games myself, and some of them were absolutely turgid. So that's true and fair. But it's surely a law of diminishing returns in that, like, are they better than they were last month? are the better than they were last week. It does feel as if he made a bit of a... he did make a bit of a jump in terms of progress, but it doesn't feel as if they're making a huge amount at the minute.
Yeah, and look, I can see that. I can see that point of view. And look, the phrase papering over the cracks has probably been used quite often with Solskjaer. Like, when he needs a big result, and he did on Wednesday, he tends to get it. And probably the same heading into this game against Liverpool on Sunday. You almost are more confident with the United team under Solskjaer heading into the big games than you are heading into the games against some of the lesser outfits. I'm not really calling Leicester or Everton lesser outfits, but those games where teams could actually get a result. Andy Mitten kind of touched on this the other day. Like, the reaction among fans in the stadium is probably different to the vitriol and anti Solskjaer, Ollie out stuff you get online. But I can see both points of view.
Weren't there boos at halftime on Wednesday night?
There were quite loud boos that could be heard throughout the stadium as well. Definitely noticeable boos. But as Ollie was walking off, he was kind of trying to gee the crowd up. The atmosphere at halftime was horrible. Everyone in the toilet, like, there was no one speaking to each other. It was absolutely the fans were just...
Does that not blow a hole in Andy Mitten's theory about the online thing versus the, like, everybody's on a high when they're at the ground because United have come back unbelievably to where, like, they look half time, you're like, what's this guy doing? Yeah. Clapping on the crowd when they're booing him, and then, you know, everybody in the ground gets carried away with the fact that it's 3-2, but everybody at home can see that was get out of jail time.
Yeah, but I think what Andy's point was that he still got cheered off at halftime by the, you know, the Red Army, the real the standing singing chanting end in the Stretford end, and that was something that kind of noticeably took me back as well, that the boos kind of lasted maybe for 10-15 seconds, and then it was overtaken as he was walking off the pitch and the team were walking off the pitch by more of a come on, like let's get this going again, and when they came out in the second half and as soon as the Rashford goal went in, the entire atmosphere changed. And look, from 2-1, everyone in the stadium probably expected United to go on and win. But like, he's taken that team from, look, in his 3 years, sixth in the league to third in the league to second in the league. He's made the big signings now with Varane, Sancho, Ronaldo. To not win a trophy this year and to not take the team forward would be disastrous and would spell the end for Solskjaer, let's be honest. But I'm probably slightly different to other United fans who are calling for his head after every single game. I probably think he's earned the right to get this team to the end of the season and see where he takes them.
Limp on, Jen, is what you're saying. This will be fine. Limp on to the end of the season. He's too much of a legend. Look what he did for us over the years. You know, he's the one responsible. Ronaldo, I mean, whatever.
Well, I know when I say this now, as people are going to be viciously typing, every time I say something positive about Solskjaer on this show, people viciously start typing and saying, what are you talking about? Rose-tinted glasses, United fan, isn't seeing this clearly. But the reality is, who's out there to replace him right now? And you cannot, like, Mike Phelan's got a new contract recently.
That is a damning indictment, Shane. Better is out there?
Well, it has to be considered. But
what you're saying is he should go, but there's just not somebody there to replace him right now.
I don't think he should go this very, like, well, certainly the character they showed in the second half the other day is encouraging, but recently performances have, like, the Leicester game, to concede 4 goals at the King Power Stadium was atrocious. Solskjaer will know that and the fans will know that, but I don't think you want to become a sacking club. You want to give managers a bit of a chance. You might say Solskjaer's had a chance now 2.5-3 years, and that is a fair assessment, but I think to sack a manager mid-season when he's trying to do something and when clearly he's not going to be sacked until the end of the season because his coaching team have got new contracts recently to match Solskjaer's contracts. The hierarchy are happy with him. It's not going to happen. So I think the more fans realise it's not going to happen until the end of the season anyway, I think they need to get behind the team. But look, if results go south between now and Christmas, of course that conversation's going to change and Solskjaer's job will be even
listen,
more risk.
Like, when Liverpool beat United at the weekend, I've a penny for your thoughts, Shane. That's, you know.
Yeah, if they beat them 4-0 or 3-0, like, and which, by the way, could well happen, given the way Liverpool are playing, you certainly have to reassess things. Like,
yeah. I mean,
it's game by game. We take it one game at a time, Adrian.
I've been looking for your, as I said at the top of the show, I've been following your social media channels and keep me busy, living vicariously through you and your appetite to get to United games. But I definitely a penny for your thoughts if Liverpool beat United at the weekend. I think, and it is a possibility. They've United's propensity to leak goals particularly. We're going to talk to Daniel Harris about that in a bit more detail in just a few minutes' time. It's a 7:45. You're watching OTB AM. Any thoughts about Liverpool United of the weekend? Lash them into us and we'll put them to Daniel Harris in just a few moments' time. And indeed, right over the course of the show, one of the highlights obviously of the weekend to come, you can hear live commentary of it on Off the Ball as well on Sunday. So Daniel Harris joining us in a few minutes to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk to Karen Duggan, mostly about Ireland and Sweden last night, looking ahead to Finland as well on Tuesday evening. We'll get her thoughts on all of that. Brian Howard, Dublin's Brian Howard, the launch of the brand new jersey, and also where are Dublin at right now, his thoughts on Proposal B, and that Argentina jersey. It's an absolute beauty. We'll get Brian's thoughts on that 20 past 8 this morning. Jason Quigley is less than a month out from a world title fight, huge fight in stateside. We're going to get Jason's thoughts on that, a month out, exactly where he's at, how he's getting on with his coach Andy Lee. And, you know, it's a bit of a once in a lifetime opportunity upcoming in the next few weeks. So great chance to talk to Jason, as we've done on the show over the last few years. After that, we're going to get a Magic Wall update. A lot of green, it seems, even overnight. There's bits and more pieces of the map falling green. Proposal B, is it going to get carried? Will O'Callaghan will have an update for us on that at 10 to 9 this morning. Alan Quinlan is going to talk rugby. Interesting weekend of interprovincials ahead and rugby generally. The Ireland squad name during the week. And a shift as well, obviously, at the top of the house in the women's game. So we get Alan Quinlan's thoughts on that. And John Giles was on the show with Nathan last night. So all that is upcoming over the course of today. As I said, if you do want to get in touch with us this morning, please fire us in your thoughts, whatever platform it happens to be that you're watching us or listening to us on this morning. Delighted to have you and love to know what you think about anything it is that we're discussing. OTBAM brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. It's 7:46 and a very good morning to you, wherever it is you are. Daniel Harris, good morning to you.
Hello.
We've been just discussing and debating. Shane, who's on the line there, was at Old Trafford at the weekend. He's going during the week. He's going again at the weekend. We've been having a lot of conversation with Andy Mitten on yesterday about the boo boys online, essentially, versus all the really committed United fans in the stadium and the difference that exists there. Is that your reading of it as well, that everybody that's paying to go to these games is fully behind the manager?
Fully behind the manager. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but I would say most people are fully behind the manager when the game's taking place. It would be wrong to say that all matchgoers think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the right man to manage United, because that's not true. And I think there are a lot of reasons to be having significant doubts. The Europa League final was probably not the final straw, but the point at which people thought this is never going to get as good as it needs to. And what we've seen over the course of the season has reinforced that idea that perhaps at the very top level, Ole's a bit short. But the hatred for him, for one of United's heroes, that you see online is extremely bizarre indeed. And is the kind of thing that you tend to see from people that that haven't watched United play before.
Well, it's always the danger, isn't it? It was always the danger with him coming back, with any legend of a club, when he comes back and he's putting his reputation on the line and all that sort of stuff. The point of the difference between the fans in the stadium and the fans online, he was booed at half time, wasn't he? Wednesday night.
Was he booed, or were people expressing a bit of dissatisfaction with the team?
And what's your view on that?
Which, I don't know, but because I wasn't doing it, but what I said to you before is that not everyone in the ground is totally behind the manager. But if you look at the way that the crowd were in the first half, and particularly in the second half, but all the way through the game, that tells you that there is a consensus that when the game's taking place, people are behind the manager, whatever doubts they may have about his long-term suitability for the job.
What's in terms of that? Because look, that is the one of the only shows in town when it comes to United at the minute. Is he the right fit or not? And like, the point we were making just a bit earlier on is that, of course, he's progressed the team since what's gone before, but it's a law of diminishing returns, isn't it? It doesn't seem as if there's a huge amount of progress month on month.
I mean, I wouldn't exactly look at progress month on month, because football's a chaotic game and things happen during a game of football. So I wouldn't look at it month on month necessarily. And I certainly wouldn't look at it game by game, as people are trying to force other people to do, but rather as a body of work. And I think, like, the body of work is not bad up till now, but the question is whether Ole can take United the rest of the distance. And we're probably going to have a good idea about that in the next few weeks. So if you're asking me personally, I think what I've seen since the beginning of the season, I guess, makes me think that it makes me think that he's not going to get there. But if he wins the next five games, then I'll see that differently. And there's a big game at the weekend. United have done pretty well against Liverpool under Ole. Like, they haven't won as many games as they ought to have done, but they haven't been beaten badly. Have they lost at all? They lost at home at Old Trafford at the end of last season, which is a game that they really ought to have won, and is a game that they could come to regret because it helped Liverpool get in the Champions League, which actually happened at the end of 2004-05. The last time United played Liverpool, actually, the game wasn't on telly, which tells you how crap both of the teams were then. Liverpool won 1-0 at Old Trafford with a penalty, and that qualified them for the Champions League, which they then went on to win. But anyhow, as far as it felt like the other night was a bit different to the game against Villarreal, although people seemed quite eager to lump them together as games United shouldn't have to win in the style that they won them. The Villarreal win was a robbery. They scored two lovely goals, United, but they could have been absolutely battered before they got on the score sheet because they're absolutely dreadful in the first half, and they found a way to make it happen. And that is a laudable characteristic, but it's not one that's going to sustain you over the course of a season or even over the course of a few weeks. But I don't think Atalanta was like that. Although United were 2-0 down at half-time, I thought they'd been the better team in the first half. They may have been too open, and Paul Scholes was especially critical of the performance, and he was probably watching it from a different angle to me. So he definitely has something to say about that. But it felt like Atalanta had scored from two dreadful defensive errors, so obviously they deserved to be ahead because United handed them the lead. But in terms of the general play, it felt like there was much more intensity and much more enterprise about the way United were going about it, and wasn't particularly surprised that they were able to turn it around. And the way they turned it around was really good. So if you look at what they changed in order to be able to do that, you would hope that at some level some lessons have been learned, because you saw that the main change I felt was that Bruno Fernandes was playing a bit deeper. And because he was playing so far forward previously, it meant that United, although they were nominally playing three men in midfield, they were getting outnumbered, and they weren't asking enough of the wide players to cover, so the two midfield players were getting pulled apart everywhere. Once they dropped Bruno in there, and it also felt like the wide players got a little bit more involved defensively, that suddenly gave them a base from which to build. And it also meant that Ronaldo was able to press a bit better because he had more idea of what was going on behind him. And then you saw a team that are a problem for anyone, even though it was only Atlanta, who before the game we were led to believe were a really good team, and then as soon as United smashed them in the second half, it was only Atlanta again. But it felt like if United played like that against Liverpool, it won't work, but if they use some of the second half changes against Liverpool, then they've got a chance, because the defenders are capable of defending much better than they have been. The midfielders are able to run around a lot, and they've got goals in the team.
Daniel, is it almost like a lose-lose for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment? Like, you point out things like the bad record they have from defending and attacking set pieces. They've some of the performances in the first half from the players, and that's probably, you've made a good point. Like, the booing, a lot of it was directed towards maybe the players as opposed to the manager necessarily. But I think, you know, if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, from his point of view, you know, that second half can be seen from one side as you know, a strength of character, a show of morale under Ole, that a comeback like that can happen. But on the other hand, a lot of fans are saying it just papers over the cracks. So is it a case of lose-lose situation for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the moment?
No, I don't think so. You'd have to be quite strange to say that winning that game was in fact losing that game. I don't think so. I don't know if it's papering over the cracks, because United are a good team. And they played like a good team in the second half. And that's surely what people want to see, what people expect to see. They went in 2-0 down and they came out and they turned it around. And what else can you do? And that can't become the norm that you wait to go behind. And it has sort of become the norm with this team. And that is a problem. But it depends if they learn from what happened. And there have been incremental improvements all the way through over Solskjaer. And the reason why I personally am getting to the point where it feels like it's not going to change is because there are particular aspects that ought to have changed by now and haven't. It's not because they were able to turn 2-0 into 3-2. It's that, is anything going to change in the long term? And we don't know that until we see it. And I think that you've also got players that are starting to settle in now. It felt like the game against Atalanta was by far Ronaldo's best performance for United. The effort that you put in running around and the way that he linked up with the other players was by far the best we've seen from him in the time so far. And I think that's to be expected, that it takes someone time to adjust. And there's been a lot written and a lot spoken by people basically saying that Cristiano Ronaldo is finished, that Juventus got worse when he signed them rather than Juventus were a team on the tail end anyway and with crap managers. So that was kind of blamed at Ronaldo. Then United signed him. And I'm not saying that his unwillingness to press isn't something that needs to change. But what I'm saying is that if you give Ronaldo the correct service, look at that ball that Luke Shaw put in for him at the end of the other night, then he will score goals. And the way that Ronaldo performs, to me, is much less a function of how much pressing he does and much more a function of a coherent team behind him. And when we saw a coherent team behind him, and I don't just mean the second half, I mean for the 90, I felt like we saw a much better display from Ronaldo. And the thing that really changed in the second half, apart from Bruno's position, was United's final ball was a bit better. They missed loads of great opportunities in the first half, but also they messed up loads of great situations because Bruno kept picking the wrong pass. And him in particular, not just him, but mainly him. But the thing that we see with Bruno is that one of the most impressive things about him is that however many times he's tried a risky pass and it hasn't come off, he'll try it again. And if you see the goal that he scored for Marcus Rashford, there was a still going around on Twitter yesterday of his body position, the position of the ball and the position of Rashford before he played that pass. And the pass doesn't look on. It looks impossible that he can put the ball into space in behind. But because he continues to try those risky moves, he managed to put it off and United equalised. And I think that what he had was, because he had Fred and McTominay behind him, he got a lot more of the ball in those situations than he had been doing previously. And it meant he had a lot of opportunities to keep trying those things. And I think that's what United really need to take away from there, that Bruno can't play like a centre-forward and he can't play like Dwight York used to play or Wayne Rooney used to play off the centre-forward, because you will then lose games in midfield. If he plays deeper, he'll get the ball sometimes a little bit deeper, as he did for that Rashford goal, but he still has the ability to turn something into a killer pass, particularly against teams that play high lines, and Liverpool play a high line. And also Virgil van Dijk is still getting his way back after that big injury that he had, and Liverpool conceding quite a few goals this season. So that'd be an area that United should be looking to target, I think, on Sunday.
I mean, it could be a fair assessment to say that, like, Bruno Fernandes perhaps played slightly better on Wednesday as well when Paul Pogba came off the bench. And that Pogba question is a conundrum that's going to follow Solskjaer and United around until the new contract situation is solved one way or the other. But what's your thoughts on Pogba at the moment? Like, is there a place for him in this? Obviously, when he plays, he's to the best of his ability. He is world class. But in terms of his best position, like, a lot of people think maybe wide left is a waste for him, maybe sitting deep doesn't get the best out of him. I mean, what's your thoughts on the Pogba situation at the moment?
I thought he did quite well when he came on at the weekend. I wouldn't be starting him in big games, because in big games against teams who you're going to have to really fight with in midfield, there's not room for him and Bruno unless you play a four-man midfield, a diamond or something. And if you do that, an extra man in midfield, then you're limiting yourself to two of Ronaldo, Greenwood, Cavani, and all the rest of them. So I wouldn't do that. But if you're making me choose between Bruno and Pogba, then to me, that's just no choice whatsoever. It's Bruno every time. And the other thing is that Pogba hasn't committed himself to the club. And if you're trying to build a team for the next few years, then putting your faith and giving appearances to someone that isn't going to stay is not something that I personally would do. And the other thing is that Pogba did get used on the left last season, but I don't think he's a better left winger than Marcus Rashford or Jadon Sancho or even the Mason Greenwood. So I would personally be leaving Pogba on the bench and using him as an impact sub in these games, unless they're very specific circumstances. So if Fred is injured, because Fred went off the other day, I thought Fred actually played really well. But if he's not available, then you have to think about what you're going to do. And maybe then you do use Pogba. But the problem with Pogba is always, it's the discipline and it's the intensity. And if he plays with discipline and intensity, then he should be able to sit in front of the back four and with Scott McTominay and patrol that area of the pitch. But you can't rely on him to be able to do that. So I wouldn't be picking him for these games. And I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to pick him for these games either. If you look at United's best performances under Ole, the two wins at City, the two wins in Paris, Pogba didn't play at all in three of them. And he came off the bench in the fourth one, the win in Paris, where he actually did do quite well. But it's not a coincidence that that's the case, because United don't have one controlling midfield player who is physically good enough and with good enough passing to be able to allow you to play Pogba and Bruno. And we've all wanted to see it, and we've all tried to see it, and it's been tried a lot of times. And at some level, you have to say, this isn't working now. It's not going to work, or at least it's not going to work often enough. So United could play a midfield with Bruno, Pogba and McTominay and beat Liverpool. They tried to do it against Liverpool last season and it almost worked. So it is possible, but you're looking at what is the most likely route to victory for United. To me, that's Pogba on the bench coming off if you need him later on. But United need to get themselves into the game. And if they play Fred McTominay and Bruno, then they've got the necessary agility and athleticism in midfield to compete, and still plenty of players that can make a difference going forward. And that fifth player just alters the balance too much.
In terms of possible outcomes this weekend, Daniel, like it, when you surveyed the various options, United pretty leaky at the back, can't seem to keep a clean sheet. It's not exactly like Liverpool have been sort of really tight in that department themselves, but also have the propensity to score a lot of goals, as, to be fair, United do, as they showed on Wednesday night. One of the possible outcomes here, like, Liverpool are looking good. They look kind of like they're back. And one of the possible outcomes here is a few goals to nil on the Liverpool side. What's your thinking about which way this pans out?
I don't think it'll be a few goals to nil. Any result is possible. There's not that much between the teams. If United turn up and play at their best level, they might still lose. If Liverpool turn up and play at their best level, they might still lose. But if United turn up and play the way that they've been playing, they would almost definitely lose. But they've got players who can do it in big games. I think they need to hope that Marcus Rashford's back, because I think of all of them, he is the most reliable big game player. The one who's done it the most often against Liverpool, against Manchester City in the European games. So they need to hope that he's available because he has that sense of timing. But I think that all results are possible. Mo Salah hasn't generally done that well against United. I think that Luke Shaw, in general, has done pretty well against him. However, he hasn't played that well this season. But I think that Liverpool's weaknesses don't play in that badly to United's strengths, because their fullbacks want to get forward. And if United's wide players can either exploit the space in behind or force them backwards, then Liverpool might struggle to create. But Liverpool do have the runners and the players that can press to do United in midfield and to stop United getting out. So United will need to have an answer for that. And Fellaini is no longer one that is available to them. So they need to find a way of playing out, and they've got themselves into trouble playing out in the past. So they need to play well. If they play well, they won't win, but they have more than enough to cause Liverpool difficulties. So I think it should be a really good game.
Can I just ask you one last one on Solskjaer, because it is an interesting talking point. And I see Scholes was saying one of the papers this morning that, and I'm sure they've probably taken the quotes from BT or somewhere like that, but he was talking about the respect that the players at City and Liverpool have for their manager, and he isn't sure, he's questioning whether that still exists for United. And I think that those who are pro Solskjaer are saying the jury's out. Like, a game like Sunday, the jury is surely coming back in after a game like that. At what point would you start to question whether Solskjaer is the right man for the job?
People have been questioning it all along, and anyone sensible has been questioning it all along, because although he got the job by doing the job, so he has showed some level of ability, and he'd also showed some level of ability previously, until you prove that you're good enough by winning trophies, by challenging for titles, then people are going to ask questions about whether you're good enough. And I'm not going to make up my mind based on what I see at the weekend, but you could make up your mind based on what we've seen until this point. If United get walloped at the weekend, it's not going to look good. But if United win at the weekend, I'm not suddenly going to say, well, actually, Solskjaer's as good a manager as Klopp and Guardiola. I mean, the difficulty for him is that's what he's competing with. And it hasn't usually been the case that United or any team is competing in their league with the two best managers in the world are there. It happened when Mourinho and Ferguson were there, where the two best managers were managing English clubs. And that is the case now. And Tuchel's also really good. So not being as good as them is not a massive insult. But at the same time, if you're managing Manchester United, you do need to be as good as them. But the problem that I think about is, if United fired Ole, let's say they fired him today, who would you go and get who you would be certain would be as good as those guys? And people will say Zidane, and people will say Conte. Definitely don't have much faith that Zidane is anywhere near as good as those guys. Conte is slightly different. We know that Conte is really good. The problem with Conte is whether you would bestow a squad with such beautiful attacking diversity on a manager like Antonio Conte for him to fall out with people, even if you did manage to to win a title, which you may or may not do, and then leave a mess subsequently. And one of the problems with United over the period has been bringing in managers who are different to the manager that went before. So what, they come in and they don't like the player, the manager that they've been left. So they sell players they should keep, like Van Gaal did. He got rid of Rafael, he got rid of Johnny Evans, he got rid of Hernandez. He replaced them with Rojo and with Falcao and with Darmian, who were crap. And you don't want to bring in another manager who's going to do that, who's got a particular idea of how he wants to play that's different from the idea that the previous manager had. And then suddenly you think that you start selling good players and buying other players, and then that manager goes, and all of a sudden you think, well, what do we do next? So you want to avoid that. And I can't see an obvious candidate. I think that if they can hang on till the end of the season, then perhaps they might be able to get Maurizio Pochettino, who, though he's making a massive bollocks of it in France, the squad that he has in Paris is not such a good squad for him, whereas the squad he would inherit at United is a squad that you could see him doing a good job with. But I would still like to see what Ole does over the next few weeks before I started making my mind up. Though, if you ask me if I think that he's going to be good enough, I guess the answer is no now, because I feel like I personally have seen enough and seen the same things repeating. But given where we are in the season and given the fixtures that are coming up, we may as well wait another few weeks to see how United get on in those games, because over the course of the last 3 years, he's improved and he's learned some stuff. So we may as well wait and see if he's learned enough more stuff to make things a little bit better and as better enough as they're going to need to be.
Yeah, I always think when you're into a conversation about is there somebody else who's immediately available who's good enough to replace this guy, that it's only headed one way. Very quickly before we wrap, your prediction for Sunday?
No, I don't know. I mean, if you're asking me, if you're forcing me to say, I'd say I think United will win 3-2. Okay. But obviously, feel free to hit me up when United there. Get bad 17-0.
We'll do exactly that next week. Good man. Enjoy.
There you go. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Thanks a lot, Daniel Harris there, and from the United Rewind. And interesting stuff as always, particularly about Paul Pogba. I think you'd have to say that is interesting. The jury perhaps coming back in on Paul Pogba. Plenty of comments coming in. Let me speak for every non-United fan, says Dennis O'Connor on YouTube. And good morning to you, Dennis. Hashtag Ole in. There seems to be a fair bit of that sort of tongue-in-cheek stuff going around. And Shane Hannon, Will is wondering, why is Hansen, he calls you here, dressed like a Bond villain? Which is an entirely legitimate question.
Well, the film came out recently. I guess it's only a fleece. It's only a fleece. I think it's not a tuxedo or anything here. It's I've got no cat on my lap. So Bond villain. I'm not a very good Bond villain.
Somebody else on YouTube, Ronaldo has messed up the squad camaraderie that Ole had built up before his arrival, and now it's seeping into the rest of the squad, says conspiracy theorist on YouTube. Ronaldo's a major problem. I kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah, he just scored a winner in a Champions League game, and he's the problem. I mean, some of the people online are just you can never keep everyone happy, but he's the PE teacher to the opposition fans, I think. And you mentioned the tongue in cheek there; they all want him to stay in the job. I think there's a bit of tongue in cheek in that, but I think what Daniel is saying there makes sense. Look, the next few weeks will tell all. We all are kind of reserving judgment on him massively until this kind of tough run of games is out of the way. So Christmas, I think, we'll know more.
Yeah, the jury for me is back in. Shane, you guys, you got to move on to the next one. Right, plenty of other comments coming in as well. Bring those to you between now and 10 a.m. this morning. Lots to come on the show today. And a reminder, by the way, on Sunday we have a huge doubleheader, a double helping of Premier League games. First up, 2 o'clock, West Ham against Tottenham. Jessica Farry is going to call that one alongside Keith Tracy in the commentary box for that game. 4:30, Manchester United against Liverpool at Old Trafford. Joe Malloy is going to make his commentary debut in the company of none other than Brian Kerr. So all of that to come over the weekend. Exciting stuff on Sunday, you'd have to agree, and exciting stuff. Plenty still to come at OTBAM this morning. We've got a packed show still to come. Alan Quinlan's going to talk rugby. Jason Quigley will be along in just a little bit to look ahead to his world title fight next month. And we're going to hear from Katie McCabe and Karen Duggan after these. OTB AM. 8:10, you're watching OTBAM, myself and Shane with you until 10 this morning. It's time to turn our attention back to events at Tala last night, the Republic of Ireland 0, Sweden 1. Karen Duggan, good morning to you.
Morning.
We've had a chance now to sleep in it. In your view, a good night's work or an opportunity missed?
A good night's work, I think. Sweden are second in the world. We had to be realistic about that. I don't think Sweden will drop any points in this group. I would be surprised. And we did go toe-to-toe with them for a long time. We rode our luck a bit in the first half, but that's going to happen against teams that are ranked ahead of you. They have some Rolls-Royce strikers up there. Some of their movement was absolutely phenomenal. And we kept it to 1-0. It tells a story when your goalkeeper is player of the match. That's the type of game it was, the type of game we expected. But we held our own and we've improved. When we played Germany in the last qualification campaign, we were conceding 3 goals. And in the first half, in that first game against Germany, it looked like it could have been 6 or 7. So there's marked improvement there and they were a better shape. And it's something to build on. And that's the most important thing.
In the lead into the game, everybody was talking about trying to keep it tight, trying to not concede early, trying to get to 60, 70 minutes and then try to go for it. And that was exactly, as it played out last night. So did Vera Powell get it very much right tactically?
She did. I think the shape was better. It allowed Denise and Megan to actually get a foot on the ball and join in the play, which they haven't been able to do when they've been playing 3 in the midfield. So I think that the shape was better given 4 in midfield. I think we had to play 5 at the back given the opposition threat. So I think we can employ that shape going forward against teams who aren't as good and just bring it further up the pitch. The gaps, as we started to tire between the midfield and Heather Payne, were always going to grow, and it made a really difficult night for Heather. But in a game where we'll have more possession and you'll see Katie joining in the attack, Lucy Quinn getting forward a bit more, hopefully we'll create more chances. And we know that we do have threat in those positions. We just need to be higher up the pitch, but we do need to maintain that discipline because we can't forget that Finland are still ranked higher than us and do have some really good quality players as well.
There were certainly sections, particularly in the first half, where we looked fairly overrun in midfield to the point that like Heather Payne had to come back to try and join in to support a little bit, which was having the knock-on impact and not having that out ball then at the end. Is there ultimately no way to kind of guard against that when you're playing a team of that quality?
I don't think so. I think when you've looked at Sweden and how they've played over the last year, I think I don't know how many goals they've scored, but when you look on their Wikipedia, it's green, 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 green. They had like 16 games unbeaten until an Olympic final. This is a top quality team. If I'm being honest, I expected us to lose by more going into this game. And I think you could take great heart from the fact that we did only concede that 1 goal. Yes, there were times where they got in behind us, but another positive is that our goalkeeper looks confident. And previously, throughout all of the friendly games we played over the last year, one of the talking points after the game was always the goalkeeper, who should be number one, mistakes that were made. And that didn't happen last night. So I think that that's one positive that came from us being overrun, is that Courtney finally got to show that she is a fantastic keeper. Her kicking was good. She looked really alert. She was vocal the whole way throughout the match. She was keeping her defence in line, particularly in the second half, when it would have been easy to lose concentration when you got tired. But I thought she did really well. So you have to look at the positives. I've been looking at a lot of the negatives over the course of all the friendly games up to the point of the start of this campaign. But if we are to build and beat a team like Finland, you have to look at those positives and tidy up some of the gaps that were there, but also keep the faith that you can go and beat a team like Finland. Now they're only ranked, I think, maybe 7 places above us, so there's not that much between us when you think of the last 2 performances and how we've played against Australia and Sweden.
Just on the keeper, Karen, Emma Byrne was making a point before the game last night. She was in the studio for us and she was talking about, she was a big fan of Grace Maloney in goal, essentially, and highlighting that Brosnan had maybe a mistake in her every now and then. But you've touched on it there, the evidence last night, very confident, big save on 35 minutes as well. Is that, I mean, who knows what happens in the next game, but that's pretty much that conversation locked off now for the foreseeable if she can continue in that type of form.
It seems to me, and I agree with Emma. I would have been in squads with Grace and I was always a massive fan. I think she's a fantastic goalkeeper. But there must be a reason why Courtney is getting the nod over Grace, because Grace is starting for her WSL club while Courtney isn't. So there's something that's going on in camp which is saying that Courtney Brosnan is the right person to start in goal. So I think that has to be the end of the conversation, that we have to trust that Vera and Jan Zvillian, the goalkeeping coach, are selecting the player who is best placed to be the last line of defence for this team. Grace's WSL performances speak for themselves. So there's something we're not seeing, but I'm happy for Courtney. She needed a game like that. And it's important that you have a steady number one. We had Emma Byrne for the bones of 20 years, and we were always known as a defence a defensive team that were solid. You didn't think that there was going to be ever too many sloppy mistakes from the goalkeeper. And that was because we had our captain and a solid character behind us for that long. And Ireland need that. They need consistency. It's been a very inconsistent up to the point of the last two games. We have looked shaky. There's been porous in defence at times and City mistakes. And we had one episode of it last night where Niamh Fahey got attracted to the ball. Louise Quinn at the same thing, and it left a wide open space. And it was unfortunate ricochet at the moment, but they probably deserved the goal given the pressure that they had put on us and the mistakes that we made in the lead up to that point.
Karen, would you say there's a positive to be taken from the fact that when Vera Pauw made that switch to the 5-4-1, Sweden kind of adapted themselves to that change? Like you'd almost see that as a sign of respect for a team as good as Sweden are. Maybe against perhaps lesser opposition than the Republic of Ireland, they wouldn't have bothered changing their system. But clearly, they showed a lot of respect to that Ireland team last night.
I think they had to in the last 20 minutes. In the first half, we were commenting because Heather was back so far that their defence never looked under any bit of pressure, and their midfielders weren't really bothering to track back because they didn't have to. And the second half, I think maybe they did come out a little bit complacent. And as we kept it to 1-0, I think they thought they were going to come out and bang in two or three more, but they didn't because they didn't have that same urgency, that same movement and desire that they had in the first half. They just kind of were seeing out the game. And they nearly died on that storage. You know, obviously there was a few penalty shouts. I think their penalty shouts were stronger than ours, but at the same time, you never know what could have happened. We could have gotten one of those. There could have been a ricochet in the box, could have fallen to Louise Quinn when she was up front there for the last 10 minutes. But they rode their luck a little bit, and I think that is credit to us. I think more so for sticking it out, for only conceding the one goal. We were always going to try and push on then at the end, but look, they're fantastic. I think Eriksson at the back, in real life, she's probably one of the best centre-backs I've ever seen. She won every header that was asked for, even when she was marking Louise Quinn, and that's no mean feat. Her switch of play in the first half, her comfort on the ball, we were up against not only a potent attack, but a defence that don't look like they're going to concede much throughout this campaign.
One of the things that Adrian and myself spoke about at the top of the show this morning was the lack of goals with this Irish squad. And look, I was reading Brendan O'Brien in the Irish Examiner this morning, and he was talking about the lack of goals as well. And even last September, when we lost 3-0 to Germany, that it broke a record 15th time in 16 games that we'd failed to score a goal against a side in the top 25 in the world. We saw similar, issues, and have seen similar issues with the men's team as well. Maybe Callum Robinson has changed that a bit recently. But like you've spoken on the show, like even earlier this year, I think, about the lack of our number 10, that maybe Katie McCabe is someone who should fill that void. But is that a concern for you, that the lack of goals in this squad at the moment?
It is, and it's to do with the shape that we play as well. We haven't been playing a number 10 who's had an opportunity to get on the ball and create. I think if we're going to start looking at goals, we do need to start looking at freeing up Katie a little bit more. And that means being a little bit less conscious at the back. It means not having Katie covering our full back. If we have five at the back, Vera, I'll call it three at the back, but when we play for Ireland, it's a five at the back. And when we have five at the back, we shouldn't need our winger or one of our midfielders covering as well. You should just allow the backs to defend, because we don't have, apart from Katie, that natural fullback who's going to be able to do that all day, because we don't have possession. We don't have enough possession. So you need someone who's going to create something out of nothing. And for me, that player is Katie McCabe. I'd like to see Heather up there doing all the chasing she can, and Katie just let the shackles off Katie a bit, so that she can go and play her game like she used to do when she was younger, before she was captain, before she was rolled out to every single media thing. Just someone who's so naturally talented. I'd like to see her get a bit more of that. Obviously, when you play.
Does that happen, Karen? Sorry to cut across. Does that happen against Finland? Do you think that like last night was the night to play her in that position because she's so good and we need to keep it tight against Sweden, but like Tuesday night is the night to, and look at maybe Denise O'Sullivan's potential absence changes that too, but that maybe against a team where we might be expected to get something out of it, that she can be a bit more adventurous?
I think she can be more adventurous, but I don't think Vera will employ her in the 10. I think she was reluctant to even put her out of the left wing back position into the left wing position. Unfortunately, it's not what I'd like to see. I think she will be able to join in the attack more, and she'll be able to get crosses into the box, but I think she's better when she can go wandering for Ireland. Obviously, for Arsenal, it's a different story when she's feeding Vivian Medema and you have Kim Little in the middle creating as well. So it's a completely different story at Arsenal. People often compare her form for Arsenal and what she should be doing for Ireland. But for Ireland, we don't have as many players who have as much of a natural attacking talent as her. Finland, away to Finland is a really, really tough task. And it's important that we don't lose that game. I would take a draw against Finland. That might seem negative because we do want to qualify. But getting them back home with the chance later on in the year to beat them with 4,000 fans would be a massive advantage. And after that Finland game, we play against the lesser-ranked teams. So it would be an opportunity to tweak the system a little bit again and maybe get Katie in the 10. So I probably wouldn't move her out against Finland just because we do have to be somewhat reserved. We can go for it a little bit more, be a little higher up the pitch, but we can't afford to lose that game. So I think that we will stick to our defensive mechanisms that we have done to this point, hope for our set pieces to be good, hope that Heather can get on the end of some long balls. All of that will still be in place. But the games after that, that's when I think we need to show more ambition and start getting goals. And that's when I think you need to have one extra attacking player on the pitch. I think Leanne Kiernan's form is really good and she can play on the wing. She has pace. So I think you could play her there and push Katie in centrally. Denise is a box-to-box player. She'll do every job on the pitch for you if she's fit. So I don't think you need to have her in the 10. I think you can afford to have her in the 8 with Megan Connolly sitting beside her and Katie in the 10 in front of her. And then two wingers who will join in the attack with Heather.
Yeah, we'll see what happens on Tuesday night. And Finland had a 3-0 win over Georgia last night as well, which must be a bit of a red flag for us. The United-Liverpool game, we better leave on a word on that. What's going to happen?
I'd say we'll be saying our prayers and lighting our candles as United fans looking at the midweek performance. Obviously, the drama is great, but yeah, I've been watching Liverpool since the start of the season. They're not going to concede goals in the way that Atalanta did, and United don't look like they're going to shore up in any way. Seem to play better when they go a goal down, but that won't work against the likes of Liverpool. If they have a first half like they did against Liverpool, it could be 4 or 5 as opposed to 2, and there's no coming back from that. So yeah, obviously I think United will set up to hit on the counter, but I wouldn't be overly hopeful. Yeah. It's probably going to be an awful game because of the two crackers we had midweek in the Champions League. It would probably be a damn squib of a nil all. I'd take a nil all as a United fan at this stage just to kind of steady the ship a little bit.
It'll be 3-2 to somebody, absolutely guaranteed. Yeah. Karen, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Karen Duggan. Reviewing the game at Tala last night. Lots more reaction to that, by the way, as well, if you want to head along to OTB Sports YouTube channel. And while you're there, hit subscribe, because we're going to hit you up with all the best stuff if you're a fully subscribed member. And it also bumps us up the chart, so we'd much appreciate your custom. So head along there, hit subscribe, hit like, drop a comment, whatever it is you want. There's loads of comments coming in this morning, not all of which are calling Hannan out for being a Bond villain. So if you have anything on that line, or indeed anything from a sporting point of view, we would love to hear from you. It's 8:24. It's Friday morning. You're watching OTB AM. We're with you until 10 this morning. An absolutely packed weekend of sport upcoming as well. We've got the Connacht Ulster game to look ahead to in the company of Alan Quinlan, as well as the squad review as well, and plenty more besides upcoming. A reminder as well, Liverpool fans, after you're finished celebrating beating United on Sunday, you won't want to miss out on our latest Cadbury FC roadshow. We're going behind the scenes at Anfield with legendary striker Robbie Fowler. We're also going to be joined by the Liverpool captain, Ireland international Niamh Fahey, and the former Liverpool midfielder and recently departed physio from the club, Richie Partridge. All with thanks to Cadbury FC and their club partnerships, granting you behind the scenes access at the Premier League's biggest club. It'll be coming soon to OTB Sports channels. And up next after these, we're going to be speaking with the Dublin footballer Brian Howard.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
All right, Dublin GAA have launched their new alternate kit. Dublin team's going to wear it in 2022. The Dublin GAA jersey available to purchase from today at Intersport Elveries and at O'Neill's.com. And I'm delighted to say, as part of the launch, Brian Howard is doing the rounds. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a nice bit of kit. When these new launches come out, is it something that gets the juices going with the players?
It's not something we pay too much attention to in terms of when we go out and we wear whatever. But yeah, this jersey, it's actually, I like it. It's something different, something out there. So yeah, looking forward to wearing it.
It's Argentina, isn't it? That was the
thing. That's naturally going to be my favourite thinking, but yeah, it's actually nice.
Yeah, well, the winds of change are coming in potentially in the GA, so maybe like a soccer jersey is just the next natural step. Yeah. And is it so it's not lighting up the WhatsApp group? It's not the sort of thing that tends to we got to win in this bit of kit type thing going from the players.
I haven't been on my phone. Maybe Noel Scully might have threw in a few pictures, but now I haven't seen it yet. It might erupt later on.
Is he the man? Is he? He's the go-to man on the fashion side.
He's the fashion icon. I'd like to think so.
What's the were you playing a bit with Rahini? Obviously out now, but
we actually had a good run with this year. We beat White Hall. We lost very convincingly to Ballyboden, but we replayed that and we lost with 15 points the first day and turned it around. We got the draw there. In the second game, and then unfortunately we got hit by the Finn at the end, but so we didn't go through. But season's over, unfortunately, for another year with Rahini.
Was it the way that the season wrapped up you from a Dublin point of view was something you're not used to, obviously, but was it extra motivation on the club side, or extra time to prepare for it, or did it any impact at all on that front?
No, you still get the same excitement going back to play Rahini. It's something that is a great opportunity, and you're yourself excited on Dublin for so many months of the year that when you go back to Rahini, it is extremely enjoyable, like being back with your mates and lads from around the area that you've grown up with and played football since I was 5 years of age. So it's good to get back to the club, play with the club, and especially when you're winning games, it's nice to go back and do something and make the club proud.
When you've that first game in the round robin for Rahini, is the Mayo game in the back of your head like, I need to knock this out of my system, or is it just that's gone, done?
It was actually thankfully a good distraction away from all the inter-county football. And when you go back to club, regardless of if you're an All-Ireland winner medal the year previous or you've lost, it's something that is out of your mind. You go out and you're back to your roots and where it all began with your club. So playing with the club, it's always just club first when you're representing Rahini.
Did you watch the Mayo game back?
I haven't yet. I haven't, like, naturally you're going to see bits. I haven't sat down and fully watched to the final whistle, but it is something that I plan on doing because it's so fresh in my head. Like, you replay it every day, the mistakes you made personally and what if I'd done this and what would have happened. So look, at this time of the year, it is sort of reflection, and you get to reflect on the season, because no doubts about it, there was a lot of positives last year. Naturally, people are going to just be like, oh, you lost, it wasn't a great year, and like, you still are, we're still going to take away, we've built on stuff, we're still progressing, learning, new management coming in, and look, people are going to say, as I said, Dublin, are they in a transition period, or are they falling away? But no, we're hungry as ever to get back, and when we get called upon from management in early January, we'll hit the ground running and be motivated to go on and try put on the best performance for the year ahead.
When you say there, like, you're picking through every day with the sort of mistakes you made, is that are you like that anyway as a player, that you review the game in your head afterwards for good or for bad?
Yeah, like, my parents know, and my girlfriend know more than anyone. But you could do kick 10 points and play amazing, and from a spectator's point of view, he was man of the match, or he was brilliant. But then you make one or two mistakes, and that's how over the years I've been able to develop. And it's just like you take for granted the stuff like the catching and the kicking that you should be doing. And if you could go past that, sort of, it's what you expect. That's what I expect of myself, making that pass. And when something doesn't go to plan, or you over kick a shot, or the shot goes wide, you're like, okay, how do I rectify that? And next time, how does that not happen? And Yeah, but it is something like that. That game does will go through your head. But then again, but once you get back as a group, it's onto the next task, and that will be forgotten about, because if you get bogged down, it's like you win All Ireland, and if you go into next year, be like, oh, I'm an All Ireland champion. Like in the past, that's never been a thing. Like once we go back, once we after that All Ireland, it's a new one begins, and we're at the start of a new season where teams are hunting us down, and now start of this season, we're going to be trying to hunt down Tyrone and all the other teams that are going to be wanting the same bit of tin as ourselves. But yeah, like you'll get bogged down, you'll learn from it, and we'll move on and really get hit the ground running now in January.
It was such a weird game in so many ways, wasn't it? Like there was you were so far ahead, even at halftime, you were thinking, oh, here we go again. And then the third quarter sort of took the air out of you, and then you had the Henley Philly moment at the end, and obviously into extra time and all that stuff. It's like, geez, in terms of trying to analyse the game, I really don't know where you begin. But what did strike me was that we've seen that game with Dublin 100 times before, but there was always some sort of a way to that you managed to get over the line. What are your own, like, in an overall sense? People are talking about everybody's saying, right, Dublin have come back to the pack a bit, or maybe some, you know, the likes of Mayo or Tyrone have stepped up a little bit. Is it? Are you? Do you go with that bit that the gap has tightened up now?
Look, it was that game. Everybody's going to be referencing it for years down the line. And like, if you look at the first two quarters in that game, we were extremely good. We went about our business as usual. And the second half was just uncharacteristic of ourselves. It's something that we haven't seen. We've had all the answers in the past, but you look at Mayo and like some games that we've had with them, and it goes right down to the wire. It's a kick of a ball either way. And in the past, we've been fortunate enough to come out on the right side. But that day, it was just Mayo's day, and they're the better team on the day. And credit to them. They're serious competitors and keep coming back year after year when people were saying, oh, is this them done? But now, and no doubt now, unfortunately, obviously, they'd be bitterly disappointed about not getting the result and winning the All-Ireland this year, but they'll be back again stronger than ever as they have in the past. So, yeah, it's like all the other teams, everybody's coming more competitive. And like ourselves, people might think we're getting better and better, but that's just for ourselves. And when we're in the dressing room, we can just see ourselves progressing. And the standard of football just around the country is extremely high at the moment. And you look at all teams in Leinster and other provinces that are going to be knocking on the door and fancy themselves every year. And going into next year, there's now a foregone conclusion that there'll be certain teams there, because as you know, anything can happen and there can be upsets. So look, yeah, it's just exciting now, and whatever's happened in the past last couple of months, once you get back as a group and get back training, we'd be strictly at the job in hand, and we won't be looking at anything or reflecting too much on what happened in the past. It's just sort of just learning and pushing on and making sure that we make ourselves in the best manner that we can going into next year.
Some of that in terms of the quality of the teams might be dependent on the Congress this weekend, and I'll come back to that now in a second. Just two quick ones on the final. I know I'm sure you're sick to the teeth thinking about it and talking about it, but the from your own personal point of view, when all you know is winning, from a Dublin point of view, what do you do personally when you've lost? Was it how much of a different experience for you was it, or like even in a group sense, or yeah, what was your experience of coming out a very different experience at the end of it?
Yeah, like I'm not going to lie, it was strange, and everything I've known, obviously when you could play championship games and it mightn't be a good performance in the dressing rooms, you'd be down, even if you got the win, it wasn't, you might have performed well or the team might have performed well, but thankfully you got over the line. But that day, yeah, it was something, it was surreal, it was something that I wouldn't like to experience again. And yeah, all good things in life has to come to an end, and unfortunately that was the day. And the dressing room, it was a eerie place. It was something that you could hear a pin drop, and But yeah, it's just one of those things that the dressing room, after as players, we know we let ourselves down that day. But look, nobody goes out to play bad. Nobody goes out to intentionally lose a game. So look, we build it, pick ourselves up and go again.
Does somebody break the silence when it's like that? Is one of any of the senior players or Desi or what happens?
Look, people have likes of the senior lads. They were very helpful to the younger lads. Everybody was pretty disappointed, but the older lads have unfortunately experienced that a defeat in championship, Donegal, and it's surreal for them as well. It's not a known environment, thankfully, and we've been fortunate, and you value what you had, and that's why it was so disappointing and hard to watch Tyrone and Mayo in that final. Although they both deserved it, I was envying them because I knew excitement and everything that was surrounding. It's not the occasion, the build up, the hype around it, and then the couple of days and the couple of months after, it's special, not just for yourselves, but for clubs, for families, for friends. It's a huge honour, and that was a bit that was eating away at me. Like, but look, it's next year's new year, and anything can happen, as I said. So we're well aware of where you need to be next year.
Where did you watch it, the final?
I was with lads. We had a game the next day, and I just went. So I actually was down Harry Burns. We had a game the next day, so just sitting there, just watching it with a pint of Ribena, and just watching the game. And once the final whistle, I was bed into it from minute one to didn't watch any of the pre-game, but and then straight after the final whistle, it went off, and I turned back around. But now, as I said, it was tough to watch. But then credit to both of them, it was an amazing game, and Tyrone were the winners that day.
Do you find yourself like kicking the ball or like making? I just want to be out there. Just put me out there.
You're going to be a critic, and you're like, "Why would you do that?" Or gee, that point, you're just like, "What would you have done in that situation?" But look, it was tough to watch, but. Credit to them.
That's interesting that you find yourself in the same place as all the rest of us schmucks when we're watching it going, oh, how could he have done that? Why did he do that?
Yeah. But that's be a critic when you're sitting back and watching and being like, oh, how did he miss that or something? But I've had the opportunity to be in there, and it's not, some people might make it look easy, but when you're out there, it's not easy at all. There's a lot of other things and the occasion, but yeah, look, it's something that I hopefully won't want to see again.
Are you paying much attention to the big vote on Saturday?
Look, to be honest, Nessie's gonna be talked about it, but for me, it's just something that I don't know the ins and outs, and I let those experts do what they do. But for me, it's just the more competitive games, the better, and the more games in general. Regardless of what time of the year, more games. I think from a supporter's perspective, that's extremely important. They want to see games. They want to travel down the country. They want those away games. Like, and people are saying, should it be changed or something? That's in my opinion. I don't have an opinion on it. But Super 8, there was talks about it, and is this going to work? And for me, I really enjoyed playing Super 8. I thought it was amazing going down the country, got to play a Super 8 game in Oma, just stuff like that. And those days are extremely special, and you remember those days. So look, whatever comes, it's going to be, they're making it for the right decisions. But look, for me, the more games, anytime I get to represent Dublin and throw on a jersey, it's a huge honour, and for clubs, for everything. And the more games, the more opportunity players will get to represent Dublin. So, yeah, I think Proposal B seems to be the one that I would be favouring at the moment.
Yeah, Declan Darcy was on the show during the week, and he was talking about that exact thing about, like, the players never wanted to be stuck in Croke Park. That's, I'm misrepresenting his, stuck is definitely not the word, but that he was saying that they were more than happy to get out and about and experience what it was like about the country. And the other point being that nobody really enjoys the £20 trimmings that are handed out to some of the counties that ultimately everybody accepts that that's not for the good of them and not for the good of the game. And I've just wondered from a, yeah, from a player's point of view, that's something that obviously crops up quite a bit, even in terms of, you mentioned Leinster earlier on. Proposal B does seem to do away with a lot of that stuff. And I think that's why a lot of people seem to be backing it.
Yeah, and I think it's just it comes back to more games and teams might be out early summer. But yeah, look, to be honest, I haven't looked into it too much. I haven't looked at the internet. Yeah. But yeah, look, the people will have their opinions regardless of what one, and people want to bring in some A or B. But at the end of the day, whichever's brought in will myself, you just go out. Is going to be at the forefront of our minds, whether it's in early January or whenever it may be. That will be at the forefront of my mind anyway.
Yeah, well, look, we look forward to seeing that Argentina jersey out and about around the grounds, I'm sure, over the next few months. It's an absolute cracker, and you've been very good with your time. Best of luck for 2022. Brian, thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yes. OTB AM.
Yeah, that was Brian Howard talking to us at the launch of Dublin GAA's new alternate kit. Dublin teams will wear that from 2022, and the Dublin GAA jersey available to purchase from today at Intersport Elvries, and you can pick it up as well at O'Neill's.com. Do keep your comments coming into us over the course of this morning. You are watching OTB AM. It's 8:42. We're brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. As I said, do keep your comments coming in. We've Alan Quinlan on the rugby upcoming and plenty more besides as well. Myself and Shane with you until 10 this morning. It's time to turn our attention to boxing. We're less than a month out from the WBO world title fight between Jason Quigley and Demetrius Andrade in New Hampshire, and I'm delighted to say to look ahead to it. Jason Quigley's on the line. Good morning to you, Jason.
Well, lads, how are we? How's things?
Forget about us. How are you?
Oh, 100%. When you mentioned Gillette, I might need one of the razors.
we'll get you, just for that plug, we'll get you something sent up.
100%.
Where are you?
I'm actually back in Donegal here now for 3 days. So we've had a great base training camp up in Dublin, myself and Andy, over the last maybe 6-7 weeks. And I've had 3 or 4 days now just back at home here in Donegal. And then we fly out to the UK now for the last 3 weeks of training camp. And then we're heading into Boston then for fight week.
And how early will you get to Boston ahead of the fight?
I'll probably get in a fight on a Friday night. So I'll probably get in the Friday or the Saturday before the fight.
Okay. And sort of acclimatise. Are you tapering at that point, or are you still working?
Yeah, at that point, with the last week, it's just really about maintaining the weight. Keeping everything fast, sharp, reactive, and just keeping the mind busy more than anything else, because once you go into fight week, it's going to be hectic enough as well. There's going to be a lot of commitments, a lot of media, a lot of every day there's something. There's going to be like a media workout, there's going to be a press conference, there's going to be the weigh-in. So you're going to be doing stuff every day. So it's about maintaining and controlling a kind of calm composure and not wasting too much nervous energy or anything like that either.
How do you do that?
Watch Netflix and chat to the home.
Store up Succession. Don't watch any of it until. is that it? Yeah, just sort of a bit of.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of it is whenever you go into fight camp, whenever you go into fight week, you know, a lot of it is how you manage it and how you prepare it, because as I said, there's a lot of demands, there's a lot of commitments come fight week. So you're either really busy and hectic, or you're just lying in the room. So you don't want to be lying in the room too much, wasting nervous energy, thinking about things, you know, just things going over in your head. So it's all about keeping good company around you and getting out for a walk, maybe seeing the town that you're in, without wasting too much energy or without, you know, doing anything too crazy. So it's mainly just about having a good playlist and maybe having something good on the TV to chill out and watch, and just more importantly for me, just having good people around you, chilling, talking, you know, having the crack, like, more than anything.
Yeah, well, you've Andy Lee in your corner, you're all right in that front anyway.
Exactly.
I was reading you during the week, you were saying that it was just, you're treating this like it's just like training for another fight, but in the back of your mind there must be something saying it's not.
Yeah, look, it's you know, as a young kid, you look at this as like, this is a dream, this is a fantasy, this is something that you've envisioned since you were a kid, and that's all great and it's all well and good. But whenever you get to this stage now and you're mature enough for this type of an opportunity, it's not a fantasy, it's not a dream anymore. I deserve to be here. You know, I worked my ass off my whole career. I've had ups, I've had downs. I literally fought to get to this position that I'm in now. So I deserve to be where I'm at now. And this is just another fight for me. This is just another opponent across the ring. This is something that I have to get into and bring my absolute best performance. And come fight night, when I do that, I believe that that will be good enough to come away world champion. But in the lead up to this fight, it's about controlling the emotions, controlling the nervous energy, and not thinking that, oh, I've been waiting for this all my life. Of course, you have that inside you. That's only natural. There's a bit of excitement, but it's controlling that and understanding that first and foremost, that you have a job to do on November 19th. You have to get in there and take care of business. So that's kind of the mindset for me over the last couple of weeks and going to be over the next couple of weeks leading into this fight, that this is just another fight, and every fight I train and I prepare 110%. But there's a wee bit more on the line just in this fight.
Do you find yourself thinking about it? Like, does your mind drift off to you with the belt in your hands after the fight, or are you allowing yourself? Like, some of that can be good visualization, motivation. Do you find yourself drifting into that sort of zone, or do you have to check yourself against that?
No, 100%. You know, these things are coming into my mind, and I'm delighted that they are coming into my mind, because it shows the inner belief that I have inside myself as well, that I can envision this and that I can see this happening. And of course, there's nights you go to your bed and, you know, all you're thinking about is that decision and, you know, Buffer or whoever it's going to be calling out, and the new WBO World Middleweight Champion. You know, these are things that it's only natural to start thinking about, and I think it's good to start thinking about and visualizing it and trying to make it into a reality before it actually is. So for me, yes, all these things are coming into my head. I am visualizing it, but I'm keeping it in a very controlled manner, and I'm not, you know, running around shouting and telling everyone, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because look, at the end of the day, Demetrius is a great champion. He's a two-time world champion. He's undefeated as a professional. I'm never, and I have never been a person to go out there and say, I'm going to get in there, I'm going to kick his ass, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to get in there the best I can possibly be. I'm going to give him one hell of a night, one hell of a fight. And without a doubt, you know, I do have confidence in myself that I can come away the world champion.
Just with that stuff you've been talking about, Jason, about sort of managing yourself in the lead into it, have you been talking to Andy about that, or is there anything from his experience in the lead into the Karabov fight that you can lean on?
Yeah, you know, Andy, like, we're obviously training together flat out this last couple of years now, and there's always, whenever we get kind of chatting in between sessions and different things, you know, it's always similarities in what Andy had been doing in his lead up to Karabov, and there's different similarities the way that this fight's happening, certain times of the year that this is happening as well, is something similar to when Andy won his world title, you know. And a lot of people are writing me off, and a lot of people have me the underdog, exactly the same way as they had Andy in that fight as well. Karabov was the world champion. He was the man that they thought was going to go on and do unbelievable things, whereas Andy went in and derailed him. And this fight and this title is really steeped in Irish history as well. Like, you know, with the likes of Andy Lee going out to get that world title, Steve Collins getting that world title, and now it's all down in my hands to bring that title back to Ireland again.
When you're talking there, Jason, about mentality, like, I remember chatting to you, I think it could have been in the Crucible in Sheffield of all places a few years ago. It was in 2018, I think. And like, you were then talking about visualizing this moment, and you had the setback with the Johnson defeat in the following year in 2019. But like, you've had to be strong mentally to get yourself back into this position. Like, the Mosley win has obviously set up this opportunity for you. But it's taken a lot of mental strength, I'm sure, to get you to this point again.
It definitely has. You know, look, any sports person will tell you, whenever you get down days, you question everything. You know, whenever things aren't going the way that you had planned or the way that you thought it was meant to go or the way that you wanted it to go, you know, you get days where you question everything. And of course, in the past, I'd be lying if I says I didn't question things. And I think it's only natural, no matter what you're doing, even in life, like, you're always going to question something if it's not going right for you. So for me, yes, there'd been a lot of days where you questioned, where was your career going? Where was I going? You know, you questioned yourself, am I good enough anymore? Like, you know, all this stuff is natural. It's stuff that creeps into your head, but you have to deal with it, and you have to switch those negative thoughts into positive thoughts, but not by just turning around saying it just doesn't happen in the flick of a switch. Like, you know, you have to create it. And over the last couple of years, I have done that by just being the best person I can be. You know, waking up every day, taking things day at a time has been key for me. Having the right people around me has been key for me. You know, good, positive people that I just get in there every day. I work hard. I be honest with myself. And over those last couple of years of working hard, doing the simple things right, resting, eating right, sleeping right, living the good life, and keeping in the gym, working hard, and creating luck for myself. You know, we get everything that we deserve in life. You know, if you put something into something, if you put a lot of hard work and effort into something, you will get the rewards. And that's what I have been doing over the last couple of years. I've made a lot of changes in my career, even since Sheffield. You know, that time I was talking to you, I've moved closer back to home, training with Andy now, and everything is starting to fall into place. There's no specific thing that I changed that was bang, that was the jigsaw puzzle fix now. There's been a lot of different moving parts that have all created together. There's a lot of pieces missing in the jigsaw, and you know, I put a lot of pieces together that has finally created the picture now that I'm in. And you know, I'm very happy with that. And a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, a lot of visualization, affirmation, all those types of things have put me in the mindset that I am now. And you know, good things are happening.
Yeah, like that support base you mentioned is so important, and I guess you have a wider support base as well. Like, it strikes me that the travel ban to the US November 8th is the date, which luckily is before your fight. And I'm sure you've heard about all the buses being organised from downtown Manhattan to New Hampshire for your fight. So, like, how happy are you to know that you'll have an Irish support there, that people can actually travel? Like Tyson Fury, for example, couldn't have a home support at his recent bout, still got the result, but it must be a nice feeling for you that you know you're going to have a huge support there.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. You know, there's nothing like the Irish support, there's nothing like the Irish fans. And you know, I can't even really imagine what it's going to be like come fight night, because we all know how loud and how proud the Irish can be. So to know that support's going to be there has given me a lot of excitement leading into this fight as well. You know, it's going to... These are the types of things as well that can get fighters through a fight, through a difficult period of a fight. It's like home advantage for football teams, Gaelic teams, everything along those lines. You know, when you're in that ring and you're hurt and you're hit and maybe you're down or something's just not going to plan, and you know, you hear the crowd roaring and shouting your name, that'll give you that extra lift, that extra percent that is going to get you over the line. And hopefully it won't come to that, but you know, I know it's going to be there. It's going to be exciting. And yeah, I'm really grateful for the support that I have already for this fight. You know, it's been something else, like the messages, everything that's coming through, and anybody I'm chatting to is, oh, there's a load of ones going from here, there's a load of ones going from there. So it's exciting, and it's creating a great buzz with us.
What it'll be by the time you meet Andre, Jason, it'll be over 6 months since the Mosley fight. Is that, would you like to have been busier in that time, or can you replicate some of that stuff or some of his style in sparring?
Yeah, look, it's that's one of the uncontrollables, you know. That's something that, you know, I can't really control when I'm going to be back in the ring again or how long of a period in between fights. So you just deal with the situations that you're given. And that's exactly what I've been doing. I'm the type of person, I always stay in the gym. I always stay ready. I always stay just on that borderline of ready to start camp. You know, I don't need to come into camp 4, 5, 6 weeks out to shift a bit of weight or to catch up on fitness. I'm always at that level. And, you know, leading into this fight now, sparring is going to be key to be ready for Andrade, southpaw sparring. And, you know, it doesn't really matter how long you're out of the ring. Tyson Fury is one man that that can prove that. And, you know, it's all about your own mindset, how you keep yourself mentally and physically prepared whenever nothing's happening, whenever there's no fights coming up. I think that's key in terms of coming to your absolute best on fight night.
Who, do you have somebody who's, in terms of his style or whatever, it's a pretty unique kind of style. Do you have somebody, have you been doing some sparring with somebody of that style, or have you, what have you got lined up?
Yeah, it's Andrade, obviously, black and white, he's a southpaw. You know, that's kind of the only thing that he has going, that he's a very unique style. So not every southpaw is going to really emulate him, because he has that unique type of style. He's a very different kind of a fighter. So you're not going to really get anybody that is exactly like him. But we have been getting a lot of southpaw sparring in. And as I says now, we're heading over to the UK, and we're going to have a few different southpaw sparring partners in over there as well. We're going to get the rounds in, and we're going to be 100% ready and fighting.
Yeah, well, we're all really looking forward to it. I presume you've booked a first-class ticket.
First class ticket is booked. I'm looking forward to it more so on the way back, because I'll be able to eat and enjoy everything that it has to offer. On the way over, I'll be, you know, just kind of watching what I'm eating on the way over. So I might be able to enjoy it 100% apart from just putting the feet up.
Yeah, well, you want to book the extra baggage for the return flight, obviously.
Exactly. I'll be wearing it on me.
Good man. Jason, a pleasure talking to you. We're all really looking forward to it, and really hoping that you get over the line as well. Good man. Well done.
Top class, thanks for having me on last year's.
Thanks a lot. We'll send that Gillette stuff up, by the way, as well. We've got to get Jason's address after that.
Lovely.
Get that stuff on to you. Good stuff, Jason Quigley there. And
lads.
Thanks a million. We're going to catch up with Jason again down the track, and we'll have plenty of build up to that fight as well. Obviously, close to the time, he's definitely a boxing story that we can all feel comfortable with getting behind. Jason Quigley on the line there, and that's upcoming November 19th, New Hampshire. It's Demetrius Andrade, and it's definitely one to look forward to. So that is where we're going to leave the boxing for the minute, and lots of love coming in for Jason as well. One from Noel here. Great discussion with Jason Quigley right now. He's got a great outlook and sounds ready to be a world champion. It really would be one of the feel-good stories of the year if we could if we could get over the line with that. Right, we're going to talk to Will in just a couple of moments' time, because there's some breaking news coming into us about the green wall, the red wall, the whatever wall it is you're having yourself. Will, what have you got for us?
Yeah, the big news this morning, Adrian, Mayo have now officially confirmed that their three votes are going to no. They've indicated all their delegates will be voting no tomorrow afternoon at Special Congress. So it's been a double blow for the yes side ahead of Proposal B vote tomorrow, with Galway giving all four of their assigned votes of their delegates and also their central council vote to the no side. And now Mayo have added three more to that. So again, that brings their running total on the no's at this stage up to 15. Yes is sitting on 45 after the confirmations that we got from last night. Realistically, that is north of 50, though, because Laois are going to vote yes after the amendments were taken away. So you can give their three across to the yes side. two of the past presidents we anticipate will be voting yes, given that they've spoken in favour of Proposal B. Sean Kelly was on Off the Ball last week talking about his support for it, and John Horne was saying he was supportive of Proposal B, albeit he was talking about, you know, a one-year derogation before bringing it in. So I think he can add their two votes to it as well. And all indications, despite the fact it's not official yet, is that Wicklow will be voting yes. They had their meeting last night, still waiting for word to come out of that meeting. But when you add in their couple of votes and the past presidents, yes is going north of 50 at this stage. Dublin haven't declared, but it seems based on the trend that we have from Leinster, that Dublin are very likely to vote yes. Donegal are going to vote no. They just haven't announced it as yet. I was informed last night by some club delegates who were at a meeting earlier this week that the executive have made the decision to vote no. Maybe Shane Hannan knows what Monaghan are going to do, but it would appear that Antrim, Tyrone and Cavan are likely to go no as well. So it's going to be a narrow no in Connacht, a strong no with the exception of Down in Ulster. And then Leinster and Munster look like they're largely going to back the idea of Proposal B coming in from
you
next
February. You can see it there on our screens as well. I think Monaghan says no, Shane.
Well, yeah, like, and Darren Hughes is probably someone who has a lot of sway in the Monaghan dressing room. He's been a great servant for Monaghan over the last number of years. And look, he's come out and said that he doesn't agree with this Proposal B. And you can see his argument in terms of, you know, he's pointing out that the sixth place team in Division 1 would fail to progress, which seems a little bit harsh, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a black sheep incident. There's a lot of people who have that concern. And John Horan's idea to maybe hold off a year if this does pass and kind of, you know, I guess, crease out any kinks in the armour, could be a wise move. But look, Darren Hughes has had a conversation with Tom Parsons. He's not just going against the GPA completely. He's, you know, he's allayed his concerns to him. And said it, but certainly that if Darren Hughes' take is anything to go by, it seems like a no in Monaghan as well.
Yeah, three votes there. I have to say, and I made this point when I was here last week, I'm so disheartened by the likes of Fermanagh, Derry, Antrim, Cavan. Like, why are these counties voting against this thing? It just makes no sense. There should be a groundswell of opinion for those teams that exist beyond the top five or six teams in the country that are absolutely nailed on. Yes, it's for you that this thing should be happening. And I'm so disheartened by it. And I'm delighted to see Down breaking from the mould in Ulster, and they are definitely on the green side. One of the things, Will, is that all these free votes will mean that we're going to get to the vote tomorrow and we're not actually going to know. We'll have some sort of a steer from the work that you've done. Colin Keyes is his... Greenwald done at the end of this morning, and all the papers are going that direction too. But we'll have some sort of a sense, but we won't know because of all these free votes.
Yeah, that's the thing. And some of these free votes are genuinely up for grabs. Like Laois, I've had to include in the blue column for a free vote, even though it's quite clear that they had conditions which were set at their meeting earlier this week. Those conditions have been met to support Proposal B. Waterford is a little bit of an unknown because they had a discussion and ended up not mandating their delegates at the meeting that they had on Tuesday night, even though it seemed that they were leaning towards yes. I don't think we can say with any great certainty that the Waterford delegates would be voting in that way. And you wouldn't rule out that maybe there might be a mixed vote there, that some delegates might vote one way and some might vote another. Similarly, we've had no real indication from Kerry where their votes are going to go. You've got four there plus the Central Council vote from Kerry, which is, you know, quite a few. It's substantial when it comes around to the discussion on the floor. I think it's significant when it comes to the discussion on the floor as well, Adrian, that Clare announced their special Congress delegates last night, and Colm Collins, their manager, who's been a fairly strong advocate of Proposal B, is going as one of their delegates. So I would be thinking that he is going with the intention to speak on the floor to probably try and convince some of the delegates at the very last minute who may well be thinking before the vote takes place at lunchtime tomorrow. And similarly, the Derry chairperson, and you were wondering about the reasoning why some counties are voting no. Well, there's an interview with him in the Irish Examiner from overnight where he discussed the fact that change is something that Derry are looking towards, but they feel the proposal be, and he was on the Fixtures Review Committee too, that this is not the right type of change. And I believe he's going to write an article tomorrow morning in the Irish Examiner on the morning of Congress. So lobbying will be going on right up until the vote actually takes place at around about 1 o'clock tomorrow.
I want to ask you about Stephen Barker, but just you mentioned Waterford, Colm Keyes has likely to support there, and Colm Keyes has for Kerry. Delegates of an open vote and will be swayed by debate. Their players are for B, but clubs have leaned towards status quo with Super 8s, which is not on the agenda, as he points out. But that's just the context on those. And in terms of the debate, right, like the Stephen Barker, Derry County Board Chairman, actually is, I think this is hugely instructive for us now heading into this vote tomorrow, because we don't have the full, as you rightly said, there's a full interview with him in the Examiner tomorrow, but we have some sort of an inclination as to, maybe not the rationale, but certainly the thinking here, and I'm going to read a couple of quotes from it. He says that he believes that the proposal itself is inherently flawed already and is not worth voting in until any necessary adjustments are made. There's still the possibility of adjustments to be made, right?
I think that's been effectively ruled out, though, on what Tom Ryan and Larry McCarthy said at their press briefing on Wednesday. So they said there's going to be no late amendments made ahead of it hitting the floor on Saturday. Earlier in the week, that was a suggestion. You know, some county chairmen were speaking about that. I know Peter O'Neill, the Laois chairman, after their meeting on Monday, said that they were holding fire on 100% support because they wanted to see if potentially amendments could be made to Proposal A or to Proposal B before it actually hit the floor at the weekend. But Larry McCarthy was asked pretty explicitly about that in the press conference at Croke Park, and he said that they wouldn't be making amendments, that basically there's been a two-year cycle of these two proposals being on the floor effectively. They've been discussed, albeit, as the Derry chairperson has pointed out, really the debate has only intensified over the last 2 weeks or the last month about this. Mm. It feels like there was a long period where we didn't talk a whole lot about Proposal A or B until Special Congress was on the horizon. But he said, you're voting on what's before you this weekend. There was some suggestion that Proposal A may even have been pulled because of a lack of support before the vote came around. But the indication is right now that A and B will both go to a vote at the weekend. And they'll go as things are now, Adrian.
They should just take A out of it altogether, shouldn't they? Just be done with it, get it off the floor. The other thing about the Stephen Barker piece here is he's, and I'm caveating this with the idea, as you said, there's a full interview in it tomorrow, but he spent all of this piece talking about the fact there's been no debate, which you would like to see him just then debate. But he says, definitely I'd be more in line with let's trial it for a few years and that's it until 60% voted out again or a new system. So, like, he is... This is, as I said, I still find it instructive ahead of the debate tomorrow and ahead of the vote tomorrow, in that he's still not sure which way he's going to go. It's obviously going to be debated forward and back, and we'll see exactly which way it lies. The international vote is the other thing, Will, that we want to touch on with you. And there's some indication from Colm Keyes this morning, from certainly reading his piece, that there's a lot of support between the UK, London maybe less so, in that they'll have obviously a team involved and there's some sort of concern there about expenses for games and stuff like that. But yeah, what's your sense of which way that, because it's a sizable one, that international vote's going to go?
Yeah, firstly, it's hugely sizable. When you take the international bodies and the UK votes into account, they've got more of a say than Ulster, Connacht and Munster combined. So while we've been very much focusing, understandably, on what's been happening at county meetings over the last week or so, the overseas vote is so significant and it's so hard to read because they, in, for the best part, the overseas bodies don't have a direct interest in the fight because they won't be playing in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. And there's a line of thinking, which would be that Larry McCarthy and Tom Ryan have given an endorsement, albeit not that strong an endorsement, of Proposal B during the week, that the international bodies will probably fall in line with what the GAA's management committee are likely to do and what they feel is best. Mm. But we know that Warwickshire have declared already that they're voting yes. Europe and their chairperson has been speaking today that he feels that there's been a total ignoring of many of the other motions which are up tomorrow, including there's some interesting ones there around players who decide to go, particularly to play abroad. And we know about players going to play in America. COVID probably put an end to it over the last couple of years, but there is a motion which will make it more difficult to go and play in the United States and then come back and play for your club. You'll have to wait until your county team have been eliminated from the championship before getting a transfer. So that's one of the other interesting motions that's actually up for debate tomorrow. And they probably interest the overseas bodies a little bit more than Proposal B. Yeah. But a lot who've been contacted over the last week have said that they're either going to wait until the day or they're not declaring where they're going. Now, thankfully, Maurice Brosnan from the Irish Examiner is over in Australia. So he was able to tell me yesterday that at least one of the two Australasian votes will be going in favour of yes, and that the expectation is both might go towards yes. So I think we can say with certainty that Warwickshire and at least one of the Australasia votes is going towards yes. But so many of the others are saying that they're there to be convinced on the day, or maybe that they don't have a strong take on it a couple of days out from Congress coming around. and the significance of, you know, almost 40 votes being available from the overseas bodies and the UK, they've got a huge say. And in all likelihood, they're going to determine the winner and loser here, because a lot of the Central Council votes we can kind of extrapolate now at this point. Like, we know that the GPA are going to vote yes. We know that at least two of the past presidents are going to vote yes. We know that the counties who've got Central Council delegates who have already pledged towards yes are likely for their extra one vote to go that way. We know Galway in particular are definitely going to use their Central Council delegate to say no. And I think it's fairly clear from the comments from, you know, we had Michael Reynolds on from Leinster Council last week here on OTBAM. We've read John Prenti's comments in the media over the last week. Central, or the Connacht Council, are very likely to vote no. Same with Leinster Council. Ulster Council are definitely going to vote no. And I think Munster may be leaning towards yes based on the way their counties have gone, but no guarantee that they will. So overseas is going to be the kingmaker here, yeah, realistically.
All right, well, there's a lot of people out there in the sort of soft no territory on the basis that, look, we'll come back to it again. Don't go for it this weekend. All in. We'll keep an eye. We call it first before you go.
I think it's going to be a narrow defeat. I think it's going to come up a little bit short. Like, getting to 110 seems a big ask at this stage, even though it's funny. We kind of get a bit like elections. We get caught up in the momentum of all this, whereby there was a lot of yes votes that seemed to come in on Tuesday night and on Wednesday, and it seemed like the numbers were good on the yes side, and they're getting a few declarations, like the one from Tom Ryan and from Larry McCarthy, and it looks like it's really getting close at that point. And then you start to see the no's filter in, and a certain suggestion that maybe people could be swayed, both on Central Council votes and on overseas. Yeah. It's so, so tight to call. And this is what makes it intriguing. I'm actually really looking forward to tomorrow afternoon, because we're not going to really know where we're at, because the caveat here that has to be made, Adrian, is even if you're mandated, we will never really know what button is pressed by a delegate at the Congress on Saturday.
And that's another, a whole other debate. And for once, I hope you're wrong. Will, John King O'Callaghan, thanks, William, for that.
Cheers, lads.
Good man. We'll keep a close eye on events tomorrow. Here's a bit of a flavour of what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio over the course of the day. From 1 o'clock, it'll be OTB Gold with Gooch Cooper. Friday Night Racing with Ger and Johnny from 3 today. Stewie Byrne is the subject of the Team 33 League of Ireland Legend interview. Emmanuel Petit from 6, and then Off the Ball on your radio from 7 this evening. And by the way, the snap on OTB Sports, brought to you in association with the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. It'll be Northwestern up against Nebraska, the Aviva Stadium, Saturday, August 27th of next year. You can check out the website at collegefootballireland.com for full details and all of that. Keep an eye out as well, by the way, for a very special preview of this week's episode during the upcoming ad break. Mike Carlson offering Keane and Ronan his thoughts on the Bills quarterback Josh Allen. We're back with Alan Quinlan talking rugby next.
OTB AM.
All right, so to be AM, it is 9:15 on this Friday morning. What a busy sport of weekend lies ahead. Myself and Shane with you until 10 this morning. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Morning, Adrian. How are you?
Good. Lots of URC to get stuck into, including the Aviva tomorrow evening. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first of all, the Ireland squad, we haven't had a chance to catch up with you on that. I should say, Alan Quinlan, host of the Red 78 podcast, available now on the Rugby Channel. Simon Zeebo in. Something changed, Quinny, between the 50-man squad that was named in September and now. Was it just that they had to leave a sort of a reasonable gap to say, you know, we don't want to rush this guy? Before you send that second text, was that it? Or were they wowed over by a couple of performances?
That's a good question. I think probably just wanted him to play a few games first before they announced him in that training squad. And unfortunately, he didn't get much ball last week. He scored two good tries against the Sharks, and I suppose showed a little bit of magic. Didn't have a lot to do for those tries, but did some very good things in the game as well, and looked strong and assured and stuff like that. But I suppose this is the argument for certain players when coaches kind of see something in a player and see what they can do and the talent they have. And I heard Draco saying it during the week, like it's down to an opinion. If you're into a player and you like a player, you'll go back and pick them. And you look at someone like Jack Carty, who is very unlucky not to be in the squad. And I think the point was made that maybe they look at him and don't see him being a starter for Ireland. I don't know. Maybe that's a bit harsh to say that, but he's unfortunate not to be in there.
Does There's literally nothing else you could do, Quinny, is there? Like, that's...
Well, Connacht struggled for a few games as well, Adrian. It wasn't that he had man of the match performances and them all. Maybe he's got to work that bit harder and play some... tomorrow is a big game.
Yeah.
Connacht do well tomorrow and he plays well in that. Well, then there's an argument. He might end up... there might be an injury. He might be called into the squad. So he's got to be patient as well. You know, it's sometimes a bit more frustrating for other players. I experienced that in my own career where you end up playing some good games and you still... It's the opinion of another player who maybe not shooting the lights out at that particular time, but the coach believes in him and something like that. So it's a bit unfortunate for him. For Zeebo, is someone like Andy Farrell will look at someone like Zeebo and Mike Cat and they'll think, what are his big advantages? What are the positives here in Simon Zeebo? It's that X factor, it's that attack, it's that individual brilliance. What are the weaknesses? Well, you know, maybe he can switch off sometimes. Maybe he needs to be stronger defensively. Maybe the work rate needs to be up a little bit. But we've all had weaknesses. And I think when you have someone with such incredible talent, it tickles your fancy more than looking at the weaknesses. And that's what's probably happened here. Zeebo can unlock defence and he can do something special. So
from opposition, we're going to get into over the next, God knows, couple of years talking about, is he a fullback? Is he a wing? Is that a legitimate debate or do we just accept that he's going to be in to fill whatever role is going?
Well, it doesn't bother me. I think he can play very effective as a winger as well. Fullback gets him involved that bit more. He's very good under the high ball, in fairness to him. That's one of his strengths. The left boot is a massive weapon for a team as well. You know, I think Ireland have used Stockdale effectively over the years with that left boot. You saw the block down last week from Jack Carty on Joey Carberry. If you had someone like Zeebo as an option to give a pass to and a left boot as well for that crossfield kind of wipers kick, it's a great weapon to have, or have your right footed kicker at one side of the scrum and your left foot at the other. It's a really good option. So Hugo Keenan has been rock solid since he's moved into full back. So I think that position is his own. So I think for Simon Zeebo, I think it's fighting to try and get a position on the wing.
That's an interesting point, Quinny, that you mentioned Hugo Keenan. Like I know Keith Wood was on Off the Ball during the week kind of saying similar things, that look, he's a huge fan of him, but the competition at the position is huge. You've got Zeebo and Keenan, Carberry, Larmer, who can play there as well. Like, when you're looking ahead to these internationals coming up, is Zeebo used, if he is at fullback, is he used in the bigger games, the New Zealand game, the Argentina game, or how do you see it? It seems unlikely that Zeebo will be used in the USA game, for example.
Well, I don't know, Shane. I think maybe they'll want to get the jersey on his back and get him kind of firing up the crowd and doing something special in that game as well. So I don't know. I think he's in the squad. He's someone who's a lot of experience. He's played in a lot of big games over the years. It's been 4 years since he's played in Ireland short. I think the biggest game is New Zealand. That's the standout one. But they're three tough tests. Japan caused them a lot of problems in the warm-up game in the summer with their attack. Obviously, the World Cup is going to hang around for a long time, but what happened there? So I saw some people kind of giving out online a bit saying that... you know, the squad that's picked is all about winning these games. Well, it has to be. I know you need development as well, but there's six guys that made their debuts in the summer. There's two uncapped players. So there are eight guys that are practically new to the squad. France announced a squad with eight uncapped players, but effectively Ireland have a similar situation there. There's eight guys there who have come in and they were involved in those two summer tests and the two uncapped ones in Frawley and Sheehan. So I think there is a bit of a transition happening here. And Andy Farrell has capped a lot of guys in the last kind of 18 months to 2 years since he took over. But someone like Zeebo coming into the squad, we know what he can do. He's someone who can go in against and play against New Zealand or any of those games. And I think he's capable of performing and doing something special. But Hugo Keenan is the one for me, is the only one of that back three who's really nailed down that jersey over the last period of time. So the openings for me are on the wings.
Would you apply your "he needs to be patient" logic to Jack O'Donoghue as well, or is he hard done by here?
He's unlucky, but you look at the quality of the players, the back row players that have been picked. You know, he could argue that Nick Timoney has come in and that why is he getting in there? Well, he's played exceptionally well in the first four games for Ulster. He's very, very powerful. So he's unlucky. He's very unlucky. And maybe he's just, the perception is he's just a level below those other guys. He's got a really, it's a bit like, you know, and I've probably been in this position myself where there's four, five, six guys ahead of you. And it's like the Grand Slam team in 09, I tugged out in every game, but I had no complaints because you've like, you'd Heaslip, Ferris, David Wallace, Dennis Leamy. You know, you're just listing off the guys there that are players that are just exceptional, exceptional back rowers. And there's a few players like Jack Conan is coming back as, you know, starting number eight for the Lions. You've Doris. I think Gavin Coombs, his acceleration has been very impressive. So there's, you know, Peter O'Mahony's there. Josh van der Fleer, there's an energy about his performances in the last, over the last period of time as well. And towards the end of the Six Nations, he was brilliant. So look, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one for Jack O'Donoghue. Again, he's got to nail down at the starting. And you'd imagine it's probably as a seven for Munster throughout, you know, in the next period of time and maybe put himself in a position for the Six Nations.
Yeah, possibly a straight shootout with O'Mahony, and it doesn't look like he's going anywhere anytime soon either. Kamara, I want to spend a few minutes talking about the games this weekend, particularly the action at the Aviva, Connacht and Ulster, and obviously Connacht off the back of lots of interesting stuff. Obviously, all the Andy Friend comments and the narrow defeat to Munster, obviously, last weekend as well. But yeah, so it's probably, they might be playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder at the minute, Quiddy, which would be no harm for them.
No, and I think it's a really big game from now because the one thing that has been aimed at him is probably consistency, and it's a home game essentially for Connacht, but it takes away that intense kind of pressure that you get at the sports ground by bringing it to the Aviva. The idea was to try and generate extra funds and. You know, get people living in Dublin or in the area to try and bump up the crowd a little bit. I'm not sure that's worked fully for them. I hope they get a big crowd. It's consistency is the key for them. You know, they put in a big performance last week, a very aggressive one. You know, they're going to be playing against an Ulster side who we're not really sure where they're at, even though they've four very, very impressive kind of wins. I wouldn't say performances. But, you know, they were against Glasgow at home, Zebre away. Zebre away, Benetton at home, and the Lions. So we're not really sure where Ulster are at. Connacht have lost three games. There's very intense pressure on them. They need to bring the same kind of aggression and energy as last week and take on an Ulster side who would be kind of full of confidence and believing that... you know, it's an easier experience for them going to the Aviva. Ulster have played well there in recent years than going to the sports ground. But really important, you know, if you look at, if Connacht lose this game, it's kind of a couple of steps forward and a couple of steps backwards again, which has been the issue for them. They're a very good side. When they get it right, they're a great side to watch. I think it'll be a great game because Ulster throw the ball around a little bit as well. The weather might be a bit tricky for conditions-wise, but it's a hard one to call, this game.
Yeah, I'm going along tomorrow evening. Quinny, as you said, there's tickets still available as well. You can check out the Connacht social channels for that. Tickets still available. And, like, it wasn't so long ago we couldn't get to live sports, so I'd recommend if you have half an interest at all, get down
absolutely.
There and shout it on. It does definitely remove some of the home advantage. I'll be wearing my green scarf, Quinny, as you're aware. I'll be adopting another province, obviously, for the day that's in it.
Well, you're half a Connacht man anyway.
Get out of it. Come here, before we wrap, I did want to ask you about the announcement from the IRFU during the week. Greg McWilliams has come in as the head coach of the women's women's team, Adam Griggs, has left. And I read Anthony Eddy's statement with a bit of interest, citing a disappointment with the World Cup qualification. He wasn't saying that was the reason that Adam Griggs was leaving and he's staying within the ecosystem of the RFU, but he did definitely sort of mention that. In your view, do you think the RFU are or need to look a bit deeper than just the head coach role in terms of the rationale for that?
Yes, I think they've launched an independent inquiry into what happened and the failure to qualify for New Zealand, the World Cup in New Zealand, which that process is still ongoing. And I think that's really important, that the findings of that are acted upon. We know there's issues. There's lots of issues we can say about the All-Ireland League and the strength and more development. But there's a lot being done. And I said this already, there is structures in place. They just need to be strengthened. I think if anything is to come out of what happened with the disappointment for that group of women and not qualifying for that World Cup and the women's game in general, I think it's you try and learn some lessons here. Improve the structures. This isn't necessarily about opening the checkbook. It's about getting more people involved in the women's game, trying to get the scheduling right. Very simply, the interpros, none of the internationals played in the interpros, and I think they went in undercooked. And that's not just me saying it. That's a number of ex-internationals saying that those girls should have played in those interpros, got some matches under their belt. Maybe it might have been that small little difference that they needed. So there's certain things need to change. I think with Greg McWilliams coming in, having previously been involved, and you know he was there under Philip Doyle in 2013 when they won a Grand Slam, and that was the Everest, really. You know, they beat New Zealand as well. He was involved in that in 2014. So, you know, he's reached highs with him before. I think by all accounts, his structures and his man management and the impact he's had in USA and Yale University and with the USA Eagles and Rugby New York.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing but positive come out. So I think, look, at the end of the day, one of the things that has to happen on field is their skills need to improve. There was too many basic errors and mistakes. And so maybe, you know, out of a very negative situation, maybe some structural change, some more awareness about it, about the game, and trying to improve the skill set of the girls right across the board will help. And it will give them a little bit of a focus to say, look, it's gone now. We got to improve in the next cycle and, you know, try and get some positive results against Japan and the USA in the next couple of weeks. And maybe look forward to the Six Nations then and kind of bin that. And if there is some improvements made across the board and a little bit of excitement about some young players coming through and this improvements of skills, well, then it'll be a positive thing. But we'll have to wait and see what the inquiry brings out. But I would imagine that, you know, it'll go right down to trying to get more girls playing the game, trying to get more equality across the league, too many one-sided results. So, look, hopefully it's a positive thing and that some sort of positivity will come out of the appointment of Greg McWilliams. I think they're all pretty excited about him taking over.
Yeah, it does seem that way. All right, we'll talk to you next week. Good man.
Cheers, lads.
Alan Quinlan, their co-host of the Red 78 Munster podcast alongside Niamh Briggs, every episode live on the Rugby Channel. Episode 2 is now live, available every week wherever it is you get your podcasts. The full video available as well on the Rugby Channel YouTube page. You can find them on Twitter as well, at Rugby Channel 15. We're going back to this morning's big story, Ireland's loss last night. Superstar Katie McCabe, of course, big talking point that led into it. And again last night afterwards, talking to Nathan.
Katie, hard luck, an incredibly tight game and second best team in the world, and you frustrated the life out of them in that second half.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously disappointed with the results. I thought we deserved more from the game. I thought we stood toe-to-toe with them at times. We made it frustrating for them, but ultimately, we didn't get the result we wanted.
How tough was it when they were dominating possession, particularly maybe at times in the first half, and you're trying to just snatch at chances? You don't go up against that calibre of opposition every day of the week.
No, look, we've obviously played some really high-ranked teams most recently in the last few months, so we're kind of used to not having the ball, but I think obviously it might look like we're not in control, but we're in control of what we're doing and where we want to send them. But yeah, I thought they didn't create too much, and ultimately it was the own goal that was split between us.
You almost need a totally different mindset for a game like this, because Vera was saying if you went and you attacked, you could easily end up losing to a team of their quality by 6-7-0. Do you almost need to separate this from all the rest of the games in the group because of Sweden's quality as to how you play?
Yeah, I mean, we need to respect them. They're not second in the world for no reason. I watched them over the course of the summer and the quality they have, and I play up against some of them in the WSL over there as well. So, but we know what we can bring. So it was about obviously bringing that tonight, and I really thought in that second half we deserved more.
Yeah, it must be tremendously satisfying the way everyone seemed to buy into it, because as you said, there was a couple of times they look good on the counter-attack, but in that sort of third outside the penalty area, they had a lot of possession, but they had no space at all, and they were trying for the passes, but there was never on for them. That discipline sort of held right to the end.
Yeah, that was down to obviously us eliminating that space for them. We know they've got a lot of quality in the final third, and especially in those wide areas they've got players that can really hurt us, so it's about getting the bodies out there to stop the crosses and stop them playing, and I really thought we'd done that for a lot of the time.
You were never going to write off tonight's game, but Finland has always felt like they were going to be the crucial games in this group, and it'll be a very different type of game as well. Is it an easy thing to flip now, to go from being on the back foot and being well organised to actually wanting to go and really express yourselves?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, we'll look to recover tonight and then get full focus on Finland tomorrow onwards. They'll be a very, very good team. It's a difficult group we have, but it's a cliche, but we'll take each game as it comes and obviously do our best with it.
Yeah. Looked like you picked up a knock just at the very end. Was it anything serious?
I slipped, unfortunately.
So you had to pretend it was a knock, was that it?
Slipping a bit of cramp, but it was. Everyone ran their socks off tonight, and they left everything out there. I'm very proud of the team's performance, but we need to close the gap a little, and I really thought we did that tonight.
Yeah, and it was a sellout tonight. Unfortunately, it wasn't a full house because of the restrictions, but you've just been signing, again, loads of autographs. This was packed full of young girls, been inspired by what you're doing. It must be so brilliant to see after the game the impact that this team seems to be making.
Yeah, young girls and young boys. It's great to see them come and support us. It really means a lot to us. I'm biased, but I think we've got the best fans in the world. And they really carried us forward tonight, especially in that second half, cheering us on and really pushing us. And I wish we could have given them more tonight.
Yeah, you've been very good to sit out in the bitter cold. Go get in quick.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Cheers, thank you.
It's Katie McCabe in conversation with Nathan after the game last night. Shane Hannan, you're set for flight.
Yeah, I can't wait. Like, it's, I'm going to be obviously sitting in the Old Trafford stands, but certainly we'll have one here on Joe Molloy's big debut as commentator as well on Sunday.
You're prawn sandwiching it.
Prawn sandwiching. I'll be in the press area. So not quite the corporate boxes, Adrian. But no, look, you mentioned the Connacht.
You like your comfort.
Yeah, a bit of comfort. But like live sport, we can't take it for granted. And this sore throat is nothing a few strepsils can't fix. So it's an enjoyable feeling to have the option at least to go to these games.
Jürgen's at the wheel. That's what we're saying. It's there's only one result, isn't there? There is only really one result. This guy, if he sees out the season, he'll be doing extraordinarily well. They'll get somebody in who actually knows what they're doing, and United can go ahead and try and challenge. They've a playing bunch that can challenge for the league. Not a manager, though.
Yeah, it the situation in Liverpool is totally different. But Liverpool are favourites heading into Sunday. But I have a feeling something could happen on Sunday with this United team. But score draw, I think.
Get out of it. All that vague. I have a feeling something could happen with this United team. Get out of it.
Leave it open.
Listen, Joy, as you said, Joe is on commentary duty. Debut for him. He'll be alongside Brian Kerr. 4:30 kickoff, Manchester United against Liverpool on Sunday evening. And then before that, in the build up to a 2 o'clock kickoff, West Ham against Tottenham. London Derby. Jessica Farry also making her debut there. And best of luck to her. She'll be alongside Keith Tracy for that game, and a packed weekend of sport right across off the ball, so you can stay tuned both Saturday and Sunday for that, and lots more coming up over the course of today as well. You are and have been watching OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.